Okay, so what was our question? Question is, why is the world incomplete and open-ended? Mm-hmm. So the world, of course, is the word we use to talk about, in a certain way, all of the things, right? Yeah. The place where we and the things both are. Because remember, we are not the things.
But it's not the sum of the things.
It is not the sum of the things.
No.
It is not. And so we'll have to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it have to be open-ended? We hinted at this, I think, a little bit in talking about the passage about passage in our first podcast, where we talked about sort of the immanence-transcendence paradox.
Yeah.
But I think maybe the best place for us to go in order to talk about why the world has to be incomplete and open-ended is page 347.
All right.
Let's begin at the bottom of 346, where he says, "But let us look more closely. Is this really a contradiction?" Right, okay.
Yeah.
The contradiction between the reality of the world and its incompleteness.
Right.
Right? Is that a contradiction? Because we might think, oh, if the world is incomplete, that's what we would say about something that's not real. Right? Like the illusion or the hallucination is incomplete. It's not filled out. It's not full.
Or it's just an appearance.
It's just an appearance, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but let us look more closely. Is this really a contradiction and a dilemma? If I say that I am enclosed in my present, since, after all, one passes through an unnoticeable transition from the present to the past, or from the near to the far, and since it is impossible to separate strictly the present from what is merely apprehended, okay? That's the absence that Pete's been talking about in the previous podcasts.
Yep.
That things present not only the face that we see, but also they implicate a whole bunch of things that are not seen, not touched, not present, but that are implied, like the way China's implied by the house across the street.
Yep.
So that's there are things that are apprehended, not just presented. Co-presented, however you want to call it. Okay. It is impossible to separate strictly the present from what is merely apprehended. Then the transcendence of distant landscapes invades my present and introduces a suspicion of unreality, even into the experience with which I believe I coincide. If I am here and now, I am neither here nor now. If, however, I take my intentional relations with the past and with elsewhere to be constitutive of the past or of elsewhere, if I want to remove consciousness from every place and every temporality, and if I am everywhere that my perception and my memory take me, then I cannot inhabit any time. And the privileged reality that defines my current present disappears, along with the reality of my previous presence or my eventual presence. If the synthesis could be actual, if my experience formed a closed system, if the thing and the world could be defined once and for all, if spatio-temporal horizons could, even ideally, be made explicit, and if I could be conceived from nowhere, then nothing would exist. I would survey the world from above, and far from all places and times suddenly becoming real, they would in fact cease to be real because I would not inhabit any of them, and I would be nowhere engaged. If I am always and everywhere, then I am never and nowhere. Thus, there is no choice between the incompleteness of the world and its existence, between the engagement and the ubiquity of consciousness, or between transcendence and immanence. since each of these terms, when it is affirmed by itself, makes its contradiction appear. What must be understood is that for the same reason I am present here and now, and present elsewhere and always, or absent from here and now, and absent from every place and from every time, this ambiguity is not an imperfection of consciousness or of existence. It is their very definition. So, as always in a class like this, we read such long passages because it's helpful to remind ourselves precisely of the language that Merleau-Ponty is using before we dig into it. So, what he does in this paragraph, I think, is fascinating. And this is, I think, the most condensed argument he has for why the world has to be open-ended. And it's because if the world weren't open-ended, that is to say, if presence, if the presence of appearances or phenomena wasn't also a presencing of certain absencing, right? The things that aren't present, the things that are far away, or the time that is not now. If it were not the case that the field were open-ended in the way that it is, then it wouldn't be possible for it to be a field at all. It wouldn't be possible to exist. I mean, think in a way, I think his argument, he's saying something sort of like this. If the world were already complete, there'd be no place for us in it. Right? There'd if it were already complete on its own.
There would be no place from which I could experience it.
Right.
At all.
Right.
Right? In other words, there can't be a God's eye view.
Right.
As if you can see the total, the whole, in its completeness. Because we're always already in it, so it wouldn't make any sense from that particular point of view or perspective. And so there's an inescapable particularity about us, and there's no way to stop it. But that's the only vantage point from which we can experience it in the first place. And to suggest that somehow there is some vantage point that is outside of us doesn't make any sense.
Right. If the world is the place of my existence, it has to share the exact same open-ended structure
as
my existence does.
Yeah.
Because it is a way of talking about my existence.
And that's not to say, remember, lest you can get down the trap, though, and think that he's talking about a kind of pure subjectivity.
No.
Remember, that takes us back to the previous section. The thing is not me.
Right.
Right. The world is, you know, I am in the world.
Yeah.
But there are features of it that are not me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's constantly, like, the way in which the world exceeds me is, however, similar to the way that I exceed myself. Like, there is a way in which, and we'll get into this maybe when we talk about hallucinations, because there it's going to become really important to talk about the way in which I don't have an absolute grasp on myself.
Yeah.
And so those two theses play together very well. Merleau-Ponty is saying we don't have an absolute grasp on the world. Now, if we had an absolute grasp on ourselves, like Descartes with the I think, therefore I am sort of business.
Closed cogito.
Yeah. If I had an absolute grasp on my own thinking and my own consciousness, then an open-ended world would suggest a real problem. But if my consciousness is itself a kind of open-ended structure over which I don't have absolute command, then they're, as it were, different ways of talking about the same structure.
Yeah.
They're different ways of talking about the same thing. In a way, you could, I think, Merleau-Ponty might be suggesting that myself and the world are both different ways of talking about time.
Yeah.
And the way that being times itself, or being like exists only through temporal unfolding.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, I think...
It's not remade at every moment.
Right, no.
If that were the case, then you could describe it as being frozen or closed.
In yeah, way that exactly.
We talked about it previously.
It's right? Actually incomplete in every moment.
It is incomplete in every moment. It's that temporal wave.
Yeah.
On the ongoingness of it is the thing that makes it can make it such that it can only be incomplete.
Yeah.
And if there weren't incomplete, there wouldn't be one for us.
Yeah.
And so we just wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is what it. This is beginning to get into what I think he means when he says the world is the nucleus of time.
Right. And I read that, I was like, heck yeah,
man. Yeah, yeah. It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it does sound cool.
Right?
The nucleus of death.
Temporality, he reminds us on page 348, is not a diminished existence.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To need... To always need another moment to unfold yourself is not a sign of deficiency. It's a sign of life.
Yeah.
So, like, the idea that, you know... There's always another, you know, that our lives are unfinished and that every day we wake up and we keep going because they're never finished. That's what it is to have life. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine what it would be like to wake up and know that you've already done all the things that could be done?
Yeah.
And that, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's and that feeling of incompleteness, that desire for the things you haven't yet done, that's the very structure of being alive.
And yet the knowing of the things that I haven't yet done is part of a kind of overlappingness of things that have been done.
Sure.
Right? I mean, is the other sort of part of the equation. So I love it when he says that I cannot conceive of the world as a sum of things.
No.
Nor time as a sum of punctual nows, since each thing can only be presented with its full determinations if the other things recede into the vagueness of the distance, since each present can only be presented in its reality by excluding the simultaneous present of previous and later presence. Mm-hmm. And since, in this way, a sum of things or a sum of presents is nonsensical, because it would have to be remade at every single moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the whole point of the relationship between past, present, and future is that they're developmental.
You ever notice that there's a... I think I've seen... You've probably seen these, right? There's these conceptions of God, that God's mind is remaking the world at every instant.
Yeah, Descartes talks like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He does. So explicitly.
Yeah.
In the third meditation.
That's in the meditation, okay, yeah. That's weird, I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, as if
at
like...
Each moment, God has to think it in order for it to be so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's...
Come on, man.
No. Right.
Yeah.
The if something has to unfold itself gradually over time,
yeah,
that means that... It's never going to be all there all at once.
Yeah.
That means to understand a human life, you've got to, as it were, see the way that the present implies but the past and the future.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do like a biopic about a famous musician or something like that, if you want to do it based on like a single moment in their life, you're gonna have to capture that moment in a way that like implies both what they were like when they were young, what they were like when they were old, because we know that a human life is not just what someone looks like they're doing it on one day.
Yeah.
We know that that one day is laden with all these other possibilities that are both present and absent in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so the world is necessarily incomplete. That sounds kind of strange to say, but to say that time is necessarily incomplete in the sense that the present both implies but can never contain the past and the future.
Yep.
That sounds just like necessary, right? Yeah. I mean, that just sounds sensible.
Yeah.
Of course, time can't all be present all at once. That's the whole way time works. Mm-hmm. Like if you were to ask somebody, what time is it? They were like, all of them at once.
Yeah.
You'd be like, that's not it. Yeah. But somehow, when we say that about the world, that the world is fundamentally incomplete, that's jarring.
Yeah.
And so I think Merleau-Ponty is in a way helping us think about the world through some of our thinking about time that might make some of the structures of incompleteness in the world make a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, the Kurt Vonnegut Slaughterhouse-Five, the Trafalmadorians see all time at once.
Yeah.
Yeah, but of course he can't.
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. That's the point.
Yeah, that's the point.
Yeah. 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 They don't have novels, of course.
Yeah, right. Of course they don't.
Because they can't.
They can't. Yeah. Nothing sequential.
Yeah, nothing sequential. Yeah.
Which means time doesn't actually exist for them.
Yeah, they don't have time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good for that. And next up will be a short discussion of hallucinations.